Welcome back to the Bruce Salin Show, a dad's point of view. Ah, you can email me at bruce@brucesalin.com. And it is now time for the women's room with Dr. Jennifer Weberman, who is a psychologist and parent coach with over a decade of experience helping children, teens, and parents empower themselves in positive ways. She shares everything she has learned as a psychologist and parent coach on her blog, theparentingplayground.com. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Jennifer.
Thank you for having me. It's always good to be here, and I'm so excited about the topic today.
Well, you took a big risk when you started coming on my show. I mean, I'm sort of a tough interviewer, and you you took a risk right there.
That wasn't, I didn't even think about that. But yeah, at the time, I was sweating that first segment that I did with you.
Uh-huh.
And it was such a rush, and I got addicted. I've been hooked ever since.
Well, it's a good example of taking a risk. You, as it's turned out, are a complete natural, as I've told you 100 times. I'm sure at some point you will have your own show or be a guest on TV or all of the above. But tell me what you want to talk about regarding the whole risk taking.
Well, this is a topic, unfortunately, I could talk for hours about. So in the time that we have, I thought I'd do a little bit of teaching and then segue into what parents can do to really pass along this message to their kids. One of the most brilliant things I've ever heard someone say is that life occurs in correlation to the conversation we're having about it. Life mm-hmm. occurs in correlation to the conversation we're having about it. So in other words, if the conversation that I'm having about life is that failure is intolerable, then so it will be. And my life is going to look a certain way. It's going to be safe. It's going to be small. And my experiences are going to be somewhat limited. And I'm going to spend a lot of energy avoiding things and then, defending those decisions or feeling guilty about it, et cetera. If the conversation I'm having about life is that the risk of failure is necessary for growth, then my life is going to look a whole different way.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be bigger. It's probably going to be bumpier, a little bit messier, but there's going to be a lot more adventure, and I'm going to spend my energy growing, expanding, and taking in the lessons along the way. So we have to really look at the conversations that we're having about life, because that's exactly how life is going to show up for us. And my goal as a therapist is to help people identify the conversations that they don't even know they're having about life, about themselves, about other people, and then examine that to see, where does this come from? Does this serve me at all? And if it doesn't, then it's time to let it go. And what do I want to replace it with? Does that make sense so far?
It makes total sense. We were talking on the break about the wonderful phrase that Pastor Drew gave, calling the current generation the Purell generation. Mm-hmm. It's my belief, and I'm sure you agree, that in many ways our kids, and certainly even us as adults, we often learn more from failure than success. So I'm really curious how the risk aversion notion shows up in your practice. What is the reason that some of your patients are so anxious about taking the slightest risk, asking a girl to the prom, whatever it is? Why is it so much more seemingly extreme today than it may have been in the past? It's always hard to take that, that leap, whatever it is. In Pastor Drew's case, he was talking about a literal leap, but I'm talking more figuratively. What do you think is the reason it's more problematic today?
I hypothesize that the fact that we have access to so much information now that we didn't have before has made us feel that the bad things that could happen are more likely to happen because we hear about it, through the internet, through media. I feel like the world is a lot smaller now. And so it just seems to parents that, I can't let my child play in the yard without supervision because someone could kidnap him. And that's always been true, but doesn't it feel more true now that we hear about kidnapping stories or school shootings or all of these terrible things that we hear about? And I feel like for now, risk is associated with danger. And that's the message that we're sending to kids. And I think also kids, feel it as a rejection. Everything feels so personal. We're very self-absorbed when we're young, and that's natural. And so everything that happens, every failure, every rejection feels so deeply personal. So I think it's a combination of the two things.
I agree. And one of the changes in our education system is something like the self-esteem movement in California, which I think only makes it worse. If you get validated for just showing up, real achievement, really taking risks is not necessary. I'm going to get a trophy just if I show up. What kind of risk do I have to take? So idea that
message in that
it's a horrible message.
The message is that if you don't get a trophy, it's bad.
Yeah, yeah.
If you don't win, it's bad, and so we need to protect you from that.
I mean, the idea that these sports teams at the younger ages don't keep score, or they cut off score, or they make up scores because somebody's going to have hurt feelings. If you protect your children from hurt feelings, you're just delaying the hurt feelings that are inevitable in everyone's life.
And, you know,
go ahead.
That's why I love working with kids, because they get this so much faster than adults do. They get that there's a belief that they have about failure, about risk, that's not serving them. And they will let it go and replace it with something else so much faster than an adult will. We are just sort of set in our ways. We hold on to our beliefs a lot longer. Kids, even if they have parents that have been sort of teaching them risk-averse things, and not every child who's risk-averse has parents that are. Some kids just are naturally that way. But they will let it go so much faster, and that's why I love working with them. And so, there's a lot of things that parents can do to help that.
So in your practice, to the degree that you could tell me, who is more of the problem, the parent or the kid?
I wouldn't say that someone's more of the problem, but I would say that I often incorporate parent coaching sessions into the work with children, because I believe that if I can teach a parent to do something, it will have a longer and lasting and widespread effect than if I'm just teaching the child on my own. Because they're getting me 45 minutes once a week, but they're getting their parent 7 days a week. So I would say that I'm going to make more of an impact if I can share this with the parent.
I bet you every now and then there's a parent that just is kind of like thinking, why is she talking to me? Why is she not talking to my kid?
I will tell them this as soon as they call me. That very first phone call before we schedule an appointment, I say, this
smart.
Is how I work. If it doesn't work for you, great. We can help you find someone else, but this is how I work because it works the best for me.
Very good. Very wise to give them the heads up, too.
Mm-hmm.
Would you care to share any personal example of a risk you took that either paid off or didn't pay off, but you learned from?
Oh, my gosh. I love these examples. So how many minutes do I have so I know how short to make the story?
You have 2 minutes.
Okay. When I finished my degree and I was a licensed psychologist, I was working for an agency. And I was taught that having medical benefits is a very important thing, plus a steady salary is also a very important thing for a stable life. And I had those things. And I really wanted to start my own practice. And I had two clients that were each paying me $100 a session. And I had this great paying job, and I decided that I was not fulfilled at this job, and there was nowhere for me to go. There was just, I was as far as I could go in that job. So I quit my job. So I was now making $200 a week before taxes.
Were you married? Were you married at the
time? I was married.
Okay, go
and
ahead.
My husband was also out of work starting a business.
Ooh.
We had enough money in the account to last 5 months. And so I had to build a full practice in 5 months. And I did it, but it was such an adventure. And I learned so much about myself and what I was capable of that I take that with me every day of my life.
That's
every
beautiful.
Single day, Bruce, I do something that makes me uncomfortable by choice.
Will you please put that in a comment on my blog?
I will certainly do that.
On the blog about risks, because it's such a great takeaway that I'd like people to get to the degree that you could put it in words, in writing. We're nearly out of time. I do hope I'll get to see you tonight at Dad Chat and for the next week's 3 weeks, where we have Kerry Wilkerson, followed by Guy Kawasaki, followed by Angela Mayer, some really prominent, important, brilliant people are guesting on Dad Chat. You, of course, are one of our regulars, and I really enjoy it. Where can my readers, listeners, and other followers find you, Dr. Weberman?
The blog is theparentingplayground.com, and I just posted a new article yesterday on toddlers mm-hmm. and the terrible twos and some tricks for parents to deal with that. I'm also on Facebook under the same name, The Parenting Playground, and on Twitter, I'm Dr. Dr. Weberman, and I'm always on Dad Chat.
Love having you there. Love having you on my show. Thank you so much. We got to go to break. Stay tuned for some closing remarks after these messages.
Accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative. Latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In-Between.